Welcome back. I'm Peter Wood, and I'm the author of Mud Between Your Toes, A Rhodesian Farm, which is a memoir about my life growing up in Zimbabwe, or formerly Rhodesia, in the 1960s and 70s. This is a podcast about family, independence, loss, and above all, identity. The following episode was recorded on Skype and is the first of my Conversations with Peter Wood. Today I'm talking to journalist Lachlan Cahoon from Sydney, Australia. This is my first Conversations with Peter Wood episode, and I'm honoured to welcome my great friend and editor of Mud Between Your Toes, Lachlan Cahoon. Now, Lachlan, you're there?
I'm here, Pete.
Okay. Lachlan is a journalist based in Sydney. He's been a journalist for more than three decades. He's written for some of the world's best-known mastheads, such as the Financial Times, South China Morning Post, and the Australian Financial Review. He's also worked in some rather less illustrious publications, such as Mud Between Your Toes. he was based in Hong Kong, and correct me if I'm wrong, for the London Evening Standard between 1998 and 2002, and has also worked extensively in broadcast journalism as a producer and documentary maker for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. So there you go, Lachlan. Don't ever tell me I don't give you a plug every now and again.
You've been reading up on me, Pete.
I have. I think that's your profile, actually. You can't go wrong with LinkedIn. Anyway, so listen, now before I begin, I should explain to the listeners that most of these conversations will be recorded via Skype, so you'll forgive me if the quality might be not up to scratch. And also, it's been recorded from the terrace of my Hong Kong home in Sai Kung. So expect a few dogs barking and bloody planes going overhead. I mean, honestly, where are the protesters at the airport when you need them? So, without further ado, hello and welcome, Lachlan.
Pete, it's an honour to be with you for the podcast, Mud Between Your Toes. What a fantastic project it's been.
Yeah, and thanks. Hasn't it been an incredible project? You know, I mean, going all the way back to the beginning. You know, I mean, thank you for being my first ever live guinea pig. And so I trust you're relaxing there with a glass of wine. Yeah,
I am indeed.
I'm on my second. So, you know, you're talking about what a great project it's been. Remind me, how did we meet? Was it at the Mandarin Hotel in Hong Kong?
It was at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. I think it was, 1998. It was my birthday. I think I was turning 35.
It was your birthday.
That's right.
Okay. Did you say 1998? God, I thought it was a bit later than that. Wow.
Well, we just moved to Hong Kong. It was 98, and we have a mutual friend, Paul Akatos, who is a photographic editor and a photographer, and he was staying at the Mandarin Oriental, and I only just arrived in town, didn't know many people, and he said, well, come to the Mandarin Oriental. I'll invite a few people over for your birthday, and then I met this whole gang of people that I'd never met before, but I must say that you were holding court, Pete, on that occasion with hilarious stories of...
Even though Paul was my boss.
Yeah,
in fact, probably the less said about that evening, the better, come to think of it, you know. From there, a friendship, you know, developed that we hope is a lifelong friendship.
Well, absolutely. And it was on that occasion that I first became aware, not only that we would be great friends, but the store of incredible stories that you had from your time in Rhodesia. I was just like enthralled and amazed at the stories.
Sometimes I don't know what I'm talking about, Lachlan. You know? I go away from these parties, wake up the next day, can't remember what I've said. I know people look at me a bit strangely the next day.
But honestly, Pete, a lot of those stories that you were telling that night possibly made their way into the book, because I mean it was a process from there, because after that I was fascinated and sat you down and we met up again a few more times and I said, mate, that would make a great film. So then you very generously gave me your diaries from those years in
Not a lot of people know about that, do they? That you wrote a screenplay about my book.
I did.
We didn't mention this when I was promoting my book. I mean, why not, you know?
Well, it's still there. I still have draft two sitting on my desktop. It's waiting to be made. But I mean, it's a fictionalization of your story. I mean, there isn't actually a character called Peter Wood, but many of the incidents that that occurred in your book are also in the screenplay. So you're interested in me.
Are you saying that I'm not even in my fucking screenplay?
No. There's a character who is based on you. But I thought you would prefer to be fictionalized. But then, obviously, that's not the case, because you came back several years later and wrote an autobiography.
Well, you were taking so long to finish the bloody screenplay. I thought I'd have to do it myself, with me in it this time. You know.
That's right.
Oh, my God. But I remember the very night you first pulled those diaries out. And you've got to remember that I hadn't read those diaries since 1979. I mean, you know, and you started reading them, you know, and I think we're on our sort of second bottle of wine, third bottle of wine. And, you know, you thought, okay, there's something here, you know. But the thing that got me when I started reading them was the appalling spelling. I mean, I went to a good school, you know, what the hell, you know, my spelling was absolutely unbelievably bad, you know.
Well, you're still able to have a good story.
Well, you know, the best thing to do is talk about it rather than write about it, I suppose.
Yeah, indeed.
I mean, you and I, you know, we come from very different backgrounds. I mean, you're from Adelaide, the same age as me. Same month as me, am I correct?
I'm a couple of months older than you, but yeah, no, we were both born in 1962, and so yeah, that was the other thing that fascinated me, was that I grew up in a very secure upper middle class milieu in South Australia, journalism. My father was a newspaper editor, and here we were almost exactly the same age, and you'd lived through a bloody civil war in which you know, you'd had people who died, you had people, your brother had been a commando.
Come out as gay.
You come out as gay, yes. Well, I mean, I knew people who came out gay in Adelaide, but all that sort of mixture of circumstance, history, context that you'd lived through in Rhodesia absolutely fascinated me, and was an amazing contrast to my own life, which you know, I mean, Adelaide was a fantastic place to grow up, but it certainly didn't have anywhere near the sort of the conflict and the drama and the sense of history that you lived through on a daily basis as a teenager.
Well, I mean, you know, each to his own. I mean, I, you know, as you know, I went to Adelaide and I absolutely loved it. I mean, it would have been my city of choice to live in, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you know, but there you go. I mean, Adelaide, I mean, yeah, very different. So then you and your partner Alison decided to come out to Zimbabwe.
We did, 2001. I think it was, we always say it was the most dangerous holiday we've ever had.
I mean, in so many ways. I mean, boy, let's talk about that. You know, I mean, it was very much the beginning of the land invasions, and a few sort of dodgy looking characters were sort of setting up camp, occupation on the corner of our farm. I mean, it was then, wasn't it? Because, you know, so much has happened since then.
Well, we were there right at the beginning of it. I think your family's farm was taken from them only months after we were there. So we saw the last moments of that kind of lifestyle. I remember the last
gasp of colonialism in Africa.
We did. We saw the last gasp of white Rhodesia. But I remember that day, your mother had a garden party, absolutely beautiful manicured lawns at your parents' house, lovely swimming pool. We were in the bar with all the trophies from the hunting trips, drinking gin and tonics with all their friends. And it could have been 1950. It could have been 1963, you know, any time before. And yet, at that time, you were only months away from being kicked off your farm, and And so many of the other people that we met through through your parents were also dispossessed from their land. But you know, it was incredible time to be there. But God, we had fun. It was absolutely laugh
a minute. Had a lot of fun, yeah. End of empire. But you know, I mean, I think that we knew, you and I knew, that this couldn't last really in many ways. You know, but you're not going to stand there and preach to people who, you know, have put their entire lives into their farms, you know, and just didn't want to see the writing on the wall.
No, well, it was their homes, you know. I mean, yeah. And you know, I mean, your father had done an amazing thing with that property, the dams that he'd built, the irrigation that he'd built. It was a major investment and incredible land management as well. So you know, the achievements were significant. And you know, it was home to several generations of people. So amazing to have it sort of just destroyed and cast away at such so quickly.
Yeah, and it was destroyed actually. You know, I mean, I was going to ask you about the impression of the farm, but you've just explained that. But I mean, you know, that trip, you and Alison were staying in our cottage at the bottom of the garden. I remember it, we had a black mamba that lived in the ceiling of that cottage. That
and you very kindly didn't tell us about it until later.
It used to slither around, and there's also a little nest of squirrels, that the grey African squirrels that lived up there. And in the middle of the night, you'd hear this battle between the snake and the squirrels as they would sort of squeal, and then there would be the silence as the snake sort of, I guess, swallowed the little squirrel. But you did get tea in bed, which, you know, hey, or with you being an Australian, you know, you fussy coffee drinkers, you know, you had to get up and make your own coffee.
Well, we lugged our espresso coffee maker all the way from Sydney to Masidwe Farm.
My parents absolutely adored you guys. I mean, it's quite rare, actually, that my dad, you know, actually liked overseas visitors. He's always a bit sort of wary of them, but he absolutely adored you guys. I don't know what it was. You know, I suppose that you didn't sort of find him, you didn't find him scary the way us three kids found him scary.
He was no, of course not. I mean, you know, we did have that history of him being a sort of a brooding parent or anything like that. I mean, you know, an incredible guy, strong, but sardonic, very funny, very witty, but, you know, a lot of, a lot of pent up,
anger. Anger is a good one. Anger is a good word, I think, you know. He had ideas that, sort of just didn't really gel with me as a teenager, or I wasn't a teenager when you and I went out there, but I was terrified of the guy. Terrified of the guy. I would sit down next to him and think, what am I going to say? You know, what am I going to say? You know, and I have so much to tell my friends and talk about. But when I was with my father, I had nothing to say. I think he died thinking that I was this rather sort of drippy kid who, you know, was rather boring, actually, because, you know, and yet I had brilliant stories, but, you know, I didn't want to tell him. I don't know why, you know.
Well,
I suppose that's the same as parents everywhere.
He was the kind of guy who wouldn't sort of imagine this tough Rhodesian farmer would have been that tolerant of an artistic son who was discovering that he was gay.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a great trip. That from the farm, we then went down to Chirundu, where we have a little thatched house with a swimming pool on a hill overlooking the Zambezi Valley, and that was quite a funny trip as well, because that was your first sort of introduction to hippos and lions and elephants and the way my brother would jump in the outboard motor with you guys in the back and just head straight for the hippos. He always thought, if you go straight for the hippos, they will get out of your way. I don't know whether it's a great idea, but it used to terrify me. I have a hippo sort of phobia now because of this. How did you feel about that trip down to Chirundu?
Oh, look, it was fantastic, but incredibly dangerous. But you just get so used to it. There was one moment when your cousin Mark had come out from England, and he was with us at the time, and we were on a sandbank. We were fishing for brim, which we were going to use, which we were using as bait fish for the tiger fish that were in the Zambezi. And all of us up one end of the sandbar, fishing for brim. And Mark had only arrived from London the day or two before, so he was wasted from the trip. He was asleep on the sandbank at the other end of the bank, and between us and Mark there were about three crocs which had just crawled onto the sandbank with us. And I remember your mother sort of saying in this sort of very light-hearted way, "Oh, just imagine if I have to call his mother in London and tell him that and tell him that Mark's been eaten by crocs." And then we all started pissing ourselves laughing. It was the funniest thing in the world, the thought of Mark being eaten by a croc.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't think they're as aggressive as those salties, but you don't want to be falling asleep on the edge of the Zambezi River.
No.
You know, and it wouldn't have been the first time. My granddad, funny enough, nearly got taken by a croc after falling asleep on the banks of the Zambezi.
Right.
And then, but that whole trip as well, I remember we went game viewing with my brother driving the Land Rover, and we were all in the back of the Land Rover, and we came across a lioness, and it was, 20 yards away? I mean, it wasn't it wasn't far, you know. And Duncan being my brother, by the way, so Duncan had told you earlier, I think he had told you earlier, that if a lion stares at you, don't look back and make yourself into a small little ball. And, there we were sort of looking at this beautiful lioness, but it was getting agitated, its tail started flicking, and, Duncan in the front seat, completely safe, we're saying, well, if you see, is its tail flicking? Is its bloody tail flicking? Because if its tail's flicking, it means it's going to attack. And then we looked behind us, and there you and Alison were. You sort of curled up into tight little balls in the back of the Land Rover. I still don't know whether that was, old wives' tales or not, but, it was an abiding memory for me, I must say.
That lion would two bounds because it was kind of we were on the tray of the Land Rover on the track, and the lion was sort of as you say, about 15 meters away, but up a slope. So really, in two bounds, it could have been on the tray of the Land Rover with us. So.
Yeah.
Duncan was obviously stirring the shit out of us. He was just using us as lioness bait on the back of the Land Rover. But then we drove off, and we came across that guy walking along the path, and we said, "Oh, you better be careful. There's a lioness up a little bit further." And he just sort of shook his head and said, "Oh, okay, I'll be careful," and just kept walking.
That's right. I wonder whether he ever made it to his destination.
Oh.
I don't think you'll find those lions around there anymore. Chirundu is built up into this kind of shanty town. I mean, the house on the hill is still there, and it's still absolutely fabulous. But around the bottom of the hill, humanity. Mm-hmm. Chirundu is actually on the, I think they call it the Central African Highway, which is, not a highway and not very central. But there you go. And then from there, we went up to Vic Falls, which I don't remember too much about. I mean, Vic Falls is Vic Falls. I mean, the incredible falls, and that was about it, really.
There was another hilarious encounter with wildlife there when we were walking, just walking on a path next to the falls, and Alison, you and myself, we were walking along, and there were three baboons coming the other way. And so we passed within, they were coming the other way, we passed within centimetres of them. And it was like you were walking past some sort of tough bloke, walking down the street who you didn't want to look
at
you.
Some thug.
Yeah. We just passed within centimetres of these baboons walking past the other way and got a move on and walked around. It's one of the most unnerving experiences I've ever had. It's so funny.
Teeth the size of your index finger, can just sort of tear you apart. Yeah. And then we came back to Hong Kong, and I said, "Look, I'm going to write the book." And then we had plenty of bottles of wine, trying to think of a title.
I
was trying to think the other day how we came up with the title, because we There was a working title, I Am an African, but it was so wrong on so many levels. And although there's a chapter in the book called I Am an African, the title needed to be something that, you know, wasn't quite so misleading, I think. It was a word game we played in the end, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. No, we were at dinner. We went out to dinner, and I had a notepad. So as I think you were pouring the wine, and I was writing down words, and we were trying to come up with phrases and associations between the words that might work in a title. And all of a sudden, one of us blurted out "mud between your toes," and it just seemed to be right.
Oh my God! I've got something I just remembered about the trip to Chirundu on the Zambezi. On the way back, my mum nearly killed our entire family. I mean, so my mum was driving, and she's never been the greatest driver. But to her credit, she's never had a real accident. You know, even though she gives everyone else grey hair, but we were driving back to Harare. And we were going like shit off a shovel. I mean, she must have been going, I don't know, you know, well over 100 kilometers an hour.
I think it was about 120K.
And it was a two-lane sort of, if you want to call it a highway, you know, and suddenly this car was trying to pass a lorry, and this car was coming straight towards us. And there was nowhere to go other than the bush and die, basically. And we were just... And in the car, there was, who was in the front? I think Mark, my cousin, was in the front.
Alison and your mum, I think, were in the front.
Alison and mum in the front. And we were also squeezed in the back. So that was you, me.
And Mark, I think. And then Condor was on
and
the
Mark
track.
And Condor. Mark being my mum's sister's son. We were just absolutely speechless as this car came thundering towards us. And obviously they didn't see us. And we were in the right. I mean, we were in the right lane, I should say. And suddenly they looked up and they saw us. And all you could see was the whites of their eyes. And they veered off and they went careering off into the bush and hit a tree. Well, should I be telling the story? I don't know. Anyway, they hit a tree. But in the meantime, my mum had gone somehow. And, you know, she's not, you know, Niki Lauda. You know, she had somehow gone onto two wheels. Oh, no, that's the thing. You know, this huge lorry was on the one side. So there was nowhere for you to go. And this huge lorry sort of was on one side. And Lib somehow managed to tilt the Land Rover, the truck, onto two wheels, and we sort of slipped between the two vehicles, and then back onto our two wheels, and continued with our journey. And that was right at the land invasion's time. And if we had stopped and called the police, we'd probably still be in jail now.
Well, I remember Alison saying to your mother, "Do you think we should stop and see if they're okay?" And your mum said, "No, I don't think so. just get driving on." But I was convinced that we were going to die. I was I'm not a religious person, but I did take a couple of seconds just at that moment to think, "Okay, this is what it's like, and it's going to end very, very soon." But,
in a car in Zimbabwe, you know, can you imagine? And trying to get your body back to Australia, and but it didn't end there, because you were leaving the next day. So my mum took you to the airport in Harare. We got all the way to Harare. I mean, we were like 400 kilometers away, and she took you to the airport. In fact, I think we all left that day. I left the same day. And then to go back to Hong Kong, and you back to Australia. And then she was driving back to the farm. And suddenly she saw this wheel shooting down the road in front of her and thought, shit, someone's lost their bloody wheel. But it was hers, you know.
Really?
And when she went on those two wheels, going in between the two vehicles, she had obviously sheared the nuts, and her wheel came off, and she sort of went crashing off into the bush. But, you know, fortunately, she was fine. That was anyway, just a funny little aside.
Oh.
Yeah. So are you ever going to get the film shot, Lachlan? This is what I want to know. I mean, you know, the screenplay. And does it have a name? Does it have a working title?
No, you know, it didn't have a well, actually, no, it wasn't Hondo a word that you used to use at the height of the height of the Civil War.
Okay, well, you've said it all wrong. It's called Hondo.
Yeah, H-O-N-D-O,
yeah. You've got to be a little bit more masculine about it, you know. And who's going to play me? Oh, no, sorry, I forget. I'm not in it.
There's a character who's very loosely based on you.
Okay.
I'm hoping that the deserved fame for A Mud Between Your Toes will renew interest in my screenplay.
I absolutely hope so too. And I think you even had a director who you had in mind, but you know, I didn't know him because I don't know much about Australian cinema.
No, actually, the interest I had was from South Africa.
Really? So
there were some producers in Cape Town who were interested in it. But film is very expensive and protracted sort of thing to do. And that's why you were better off writing it as an autobiography. You created the book and it's published now and it's out there in the public domain. You know, the feature films, some of them take, you know, for somebody like me who's a journalist with not a track record in feature filmmaking, it'll take a long time. That said, there's a script ready to go, it details a lot of the hilarious and also very moving things that happen in the book.
And I think on that note, we can bring this first ever debut, Conversations with Peter Wood, to a close, Lachlan.
Well, I'm honoured to be your first guest.
Fantastic. And it's so great to speak to you again and hear your voice. Thanks so much for being a brilliant, 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 brilliant sport. And I was actually going to put you on the spot and invite you back later in the year for another conversation. Are you up to that?
Always. Having a conversation with you, Pete, is not the most difficult thing to do in the world.
Especially over a glass of wine.
Indeed, that's right.
Doctor and old boy, thank you so much.
Cheers, Pete.
Take care.
You've just been listening to journalist Lachlan Cahoon in conversation with Peter Wood. Well, that's about it. Thank you so much for listening to me. And remember, you can tune into my new episodes of Mud Between Your Toes via iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Blueberry, and Pocket Casts. Don't forget, you can always buy a copy of my book on both Amazon and Kindle. And I also welcome comments by email on mudbetweenyourtoes@gmail.com. If you want to get involved and you have a good story to tell about those years in Rhodesia, and if you're brave enough to be interviewed for Mud Between Your Toes, feel free to write to me. Goodbye.